6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. North and South Korean officials met through the night and continued emergency talks today as the rival neighbors work to avert a war on the peninsula. High-level meetings are taking place at the Panmunjom truce village, despite a deadline set by Pyongyang, which had threatened military action unless Seoul ended propaganda broadcast into the north and removed banks of loudspeakers it has installed along the border. Meantime, South Korea has been reporting unusual submarine movement in the north, and South Korean officials are saying Pyongyang has doubled its frontline artillery, the strength at the border with the south. Nigeria's army chief has survived an attack on his convoy by suspected Boko Haram fighters in the volatile Borno state. Army says that gunmen ambushed Lieutenant General Tukur Burutai's convoy in a village between the towns of Mafa and Dikwa over the weekends. On Sunday, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon began a two-day visit to Nigeria to talks about terrorism and other vital issues with President Muhammadu Buhari. Mr. Ban also is laying a wreath to mark the fourth anniversary of the Boko Haram suicide car bombing at the UN building in Abuja that killed at least 18. Syrian activists and the country's antiquities chief say Islamic State militants have blown up an ancient temple in Palmyra, one of the most historic sites in the Middle East. The Britain Observatory for Observatory for Human Rights confirmed the temple's destruction on Sunday. This is VOA News. Lebanon's prime minister promised Sunday to hold accountable those responsible for using excessive force against protesters and hinted at the possibility of a decision later this week to step down from his post following a second day of demonstrations against the government turned violence. Protest on Sunday in Beirut began peacefully with thousands of people continuing to express their anger about trash that piled up around the country and broader frustrations about the political system that has failed for more than a year to install a new president. Officials said Sunday's clashes injured 43 protesters and 30 police officers. French President François Hollande will bestow France's highest decoration, the Legion of Honor, on three Americans and a man from Britain today. They subdued a heavily armed gunman aboard a high-speed train on Friday. The Americans said that gut instinct to survive drove their actions, and they spoke at the U.S. Embassy in Paris on Sunday, as we hear now from reporter Lisa Bryant in Paris.
Sitting together before reporters for the first time, Americans Spencer Stone, Alex Garlatos, and Anthony Sadler described how they overpowered assailant Ayub El Hazani on the high-speed train to Paris. Stone wore a thick bandage on the thumb that El Hazani almost cut off during the struggle. Both Stone and Scarlatos have military training, but Scarlatos said a survival instinct, not the training, drove their actions.
I feel our training mostly kicked in after this assailant was already subdued, frankly, when it came to medical care and things like that, and providing security, making sure there wasn't another shooter. But in the beginning, it was mostly just gut instinct.
Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Italy's Coast Guard says 4,400 migrants were rescued off the coast of Libya in the span of one day Saturday after responding to requests for help from more than 20 vessels. So far this year, more than 100,000 people have made the Mediterranean crossing to Italy. And thousands of migrants traveled by train, bus, and foot through Macedonia and Serbia on their way to Hungary. But Hungarian authorities are building a razor wire fence to keep them from entering. The migrants, mostly Syrians, Iraqis, and Afghans, are fleeing from their conflicts in their homeland. They hope to get to Hungary because once they enter European territory, they will have easier access to the rest of the continent. Key Asian stock markets are down sharply today, continuing a global slide that saw U.S. markets drop 3% at the close of business on Friday. Get more news by going to our website at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's army spokesman denies the chief of staff was the direct target of a Boko Haram ambush.
The way you people are interpreting the story is not exactly the way it is. It's no question of embarrassment or anything. These are the kind of things we face on daily basis, and they are not even aware that the army staff was part of the convoy.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is Nigeria's army spokesman. A Guinean opposition leader is ready for October's presidential election now that the government has agreed to reforms. Senegal will not let down its guard on Ebola, and presidential campaigning began yesterday in Tanzania as the ruling party suffered two major defections.
They both confess that the government of the day in Tanzania under the CCM party is a very, very corrupt government. They also claim that the government has lost mandate really to lead development of this country.
Freeman Mbowe is the chairman of the opposition Chadema Party of Tanzania, and former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi will explain why he's running as an independent candidate in the 2016 presidential election. Those stories plus Mark Omar, sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military says it repelled a Boko Haram attack Saturday on a village 28 miles east of the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. But army spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman denies the attack was a direct ambush on Army Chief Lieutenant General Turko Butai, who was visiting the area at the time of the attack to encourage troops to keep up the fight against the Boko Haram terrorist group. Osman says the militants did not even know the army chief was in the vicinity. He said the army repelled the attack with overwhelming firepower, killing 10 of the terrorists and capturing 5. Yose says one government soldier was killed and 5 wounded.
As you are aware, the chief of army staff has been in the theater of war and the fight against terrorism and insurgency in the northeast. For the past 1 week, he was there. And Saturday, we were traveling from Maiduguri up to Tikwa and Gambarongala to, you know, encourage our troops and for the chief of army staff to see things for himself. Unfortunately, in between Mafa and Tikwa, the remnants of Boko Haram terrorists laid an ambush on the first column, I must say, of the entourage of the chief of army staff, in which there was a change of fire and 10 terrorists were killed, 5 were captured, and unfortunately, we lost a soldier. And 4 of our soldiers were equally wounded. But the situation is under control because we continue up to Longomani, where our troops are stationed, where they are refitting.
Colonel Osman, if this is your military chief and Boko Haram can launch an ambush, is this an embarrassment?
Let me tell you, the way you people are interpreting the story, it is not exactly the way it is. There's no question of embarrassment or anything. The chief of army staff has always been in the field, and it is not just him, all the services chiefs. These are the kind of things we face on a daily basis, and they are not even aware the chief of army staff was part of the convoy. It's a normal thing whenever they see military, you know, they make an attempt. But unfortunately, they paid, fortunately for us, and unfortunately for them, they paid dearly for it.
So tell me the progress you are making since the Buhari administration took over. It seems to me there has been an uptick in the number of attacks by Boko Haram.
What I want you to understand is that we have been making tremendous and steady progress in the fight against terrorism and insurgency in the country. And our troops have been closing up with the enemy to the extent that we want to isolate them into Sambisa Forest only.
This joint, the multinational joint task force, you're supposed to get additional help, 8,700 strong forces. When is this force going to come into effect?
The multinational joint task force have come on board since the beginning of this month. And, of course, they have started working earnestly to ensure that the terrorists may not have a breathing space and destroy all their known camps so that we have peace and stability in this country and, of course, the sovereignty itself.
Colonel, thank you very much again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is the Nigeria's army spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The leader of one of Guinea's main opposition parties says he's ready for the October 11th presidential election. But Sidya Touré of the Union of Republican Forces and a former prime minister says he's not sure if Guinea's Independent Electoral Commission would be fair. He says his party will welcome international observers to ensure that the October poll is free and fair. This came after President Alpha Condé's government and opposition parties signed an agreement last Friday that many say paves the way for the October elections to take place. Touré says the agreement covers three key areas, including reform of the Elections Commission.
We have an agreement about three things. The first one is about Electoral Commission. In this Electoral Commission, you have 25 members, and opposition was supposed to have 10 members. At this time, we have only three. So we have to reform the system, and they accept to give us two places, you know, to have two commissioners on the election. So because of the election coming, we have less than 2 months now, so we have obliged to accept that. The second one is the electoral list, and it's very, very, very bad one. So we have a new commission we'll put in to absolutely have an audit of this electoral list. Maybe that can help us to go to the election with a good electoral list, because today this one is not a good one.
The last time I spoke with you, the opposition was protesting that you wanted local government elections before presidential election. Was there an agreement on that topic?
This is the third point we have an agreement. We decided to take in consideration the result of the legislative, you know, Congress election of 2013 and to give advice for every party in view of his result in this election. So we have an agreement to this for 6 months, and after that we'll have a new election, a new local election.
Does that mean, Mr. Touré, that the presidential election will go ahead in October this year?
Yeah, this is a constitutional date, so it's very difficult for us to change that. They did it absolutely to do so, because those election had to be held since 6 years. So we don't have time, so we accept this kind of situation to go to presidential election, and after that we'll hold local election around May 2016.
Let's go back to your rally. How enthusiastic are your supporters?
Really very enthusiastic, but the only thing, you know, the main thing we are concerned about it is this electoral problem and this question of CENI. I'm talking about a commission, electoral commission. We're not sure that people over there will work fairly. This is our main point, main importance. So we want to have many observers coming from abroad, from the European Union, to help us, you know, to be sure that we'll have fair and free election.
And so, Mr. Touré, your party held its convention Saturday. What can you tell us?
As you know, everywhere is to designate our candidate for presidential election. And my party chose me to do the job and to go to defend our colors and to change things for this year and to have a democratic and anti-socialist regime in Guinea.
How different will your policies be from the current government?
Many, many things, you know. I have been prime minister in this country, and I have a very good record about that, about restitution, about reform, about liberalism and so everything, you know, to work for a better life for Guineans. So this regime is a socialist regime, and today our growth is 1% less. We are in recession in this country, you know, in Guinea. You cannot imagine, but we never had this kind of situation since the independence of the country in 1958.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Today's Monday, August 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Senegal was largely able to avoid last year's Ebola epidemic in West Africa, recording just one case of the deadly virus. But even with the outbreak mostly contained, doctors say the country cannot let down its guard. Maria Mandiello recently visited Dakar and has this story.
At the Fan Hospital in Dakar, Dr. Moussa Seydi treated the only Ebola case in Senegal. He says the country needs to remain on alert.
Putting our guards down, not really, but there are a few failures since we solved the first case. You'll see that basic sanitary measures are being neglected because people used to wash their hands regularly and avoided certain acts, but now people are behaving like there's never been an Ebola case here.
For that reason, Senegal's health minister recently told VOA that officials will start a new campaign to remind people about the dangers of Ebola.
Because we want the people always to be careful and just to think that it is not over. They need to take care of themselves, how they are behaving for hygiene, but also the nutrition, which is not something we are doing a lot in Senegal, but sometimes in the south you have some people who are also eating some wild animals. And
she says the country spent about $3.5 million of Senegalese and foreign donors' money in Ebola prevention efforts. And that was with only one case of the virus. Dr. Alioune Badar Ali is the co-coordinator of COUS, an emergency response center funded mostly by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
CDC's help came in many forms. First, it helped with training about 50 health workers with basic epidemiology lessons. CDC is also helping train a few of our doctors in field epidemiology.
Beyond Ebola, Dr. Lee says the country wants to make sure the Emergency Response Center has a more integrated surveillance system for diseases in human and animals and fully equipped laboratories. At the Fan Hospital, the unit that was set aside for Ebola cases has been reopened for regular use. But Dr. Seydi said they can set up an Emergency Response Center with tents within 24 hours. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Campaigning for Tanzania's October 25th presidential elections began yesterday, Sunday. The ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi Party has dominated Tanzanian politics since independence in 1964. But this time, observers say the race promises to be the closest in the country's history. This after the CCM suffered two major defections to the opposition. First, former Prime Minister Edward Lowassa, once seen as the ruling party's nominee, left and became the presidential candidate for a coalition of four major opposition parties. Then, on Saturday, Frederick Sumaya, who was Prime Minister under President Benjamin Mkapa, left the ruling party to join the opposition Chadema Party. Frema Umbawe, chairman of Chadema, says the two former prime ministers left CCM because they are convinced the party has failed to bring development to Tanzania.
Apparently, Mr. Sumaya has left CCM because he has been convinced that CCM is not the party that will be able to really steer Tanzania into fundamental development that is needed in this country. And in this case, he has decided to join the forces with the other former prime minister, who is our presidential candidate in the next general election in October.
You mentioned that already another former prime minister, Mr. Lowassa, has joined the opposition. What role is Mr. Sumaya going to play? Is he going to seek leadership, or is he going to just be with the opposition during the electoral process?
According to the press conference that took place in Dar es Salaam today, where he announced his departure from CCM into the opposition, he did mention that he's not coming into the opposition because he's seeking any particular post. But he thinks that it's the high time now that Tanzania strengthens the opposition. So we have two main political parties, like the way it is in the U.S., where you have the Republican and the Democrats, or the way the case is in England, where you have the Labour Party and the Conservative Party.
As you know, Mr. Sumaya and Mr. Lowassa has been in with the ruling party for a long while. Is there a resentment from the opposition now that these two are joining the opposition?
Certainly there was at the beginning, particularly when Mr. Lowassa decided to cross into Chadema. It was a kind of a shock because most people didn't expect it, because it was the first time ever that such a senior person from the ruling system defects into the opposition. And so Mr. Frederick Sumai has also followed suit. There's no any kind of resistance whatsoever from our opposition bloc into his coming to the opposition camp. And actually what we've been saying is we welcome all other Tanzanians from the ruling party to join the opposition because we need to strengthen the opposition. We need to have the hang parliament. We need to form the next government. So we would need to have all the experienced leaders who think that Tanzania now needs to really change. And this change can only come when we have a strong and formidable opposition.
What do the defections of Mr. Lowassa and now Mr. Sumaya say about the ruling CCM party, I mean, in terms of its policies?
Yes, they both confess that the government of the day in Tanzania under the CCM party is a very, very corrupt government. They also claim that the government has lost mandate really to lead development of this country. And they also claim that this government has mismanaged the economy and the pace of development in Tanzania should have been much, much, much faster and higher if the government of the day was effective enough to steer this country into the next level. They also apportion a lot of blames to the ruling party itself. The way the nomination process took place within Chama Chama Pinduzi to get their new presidential candidate, they think the process was not democratic. They were sidelined in the process.
Frema Umbowe is the chairman of the opposition Chadema Party of Tanzania. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi says he's running as an independent candidate for Uganda's 2016 presidential election because the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM, of which he has been a member for the past 30 years, has made it untenable for him to run on the party's ticket. Mbabazi, who first said he was seeking to nominate the NRM nomination, denies he was rejected. Rather, he said the party changed the rules in violation of its own constitution once he expressed the desire to seek the NRM nomination. Mbabazi said the NRM denied him its nomination because the party knows he commands the support of what he calls silent and loud supporters within the party.
James, I picked my nomination papers as an independent because, as I announced some time ago, it became untenable for me to try and contest within my party. Everything was done to make it impossible for me to do that, and I had no choice, therefore, but to run as an independent.
When you say it became untenable, were you rejected by the ruling National Resistance Movement?
No, but the rules were changed. They adopted new regulations, which were clear in violation of the Constitution, which were in breach of the national laws regulating our elections. They imposed heavy fees, something that had not happened before within the party. And it was obvious that all this had been done just against one person, that is myself. So I really thought that it was meaningless to try and run within the party.
Mr. Mbabazi, there are some major political parties that have been in the opposition, like the Forum for Democratic Change. Why did you not go with those parties and instead going as an independent? Can you win as an independent candidate?
Yes, of course, there are opposition parties, but I could have formed my own party. I could have joined any of the opposition parties. But that was not my idea. I have stated very clearly that I stick to the core values of our struggle, the very principles upon which we founded the National Resistance Movement. And my contention is that the leadership of the party now has veered off course. They have tried to take the party off the principles that we fought for. I do represent the original NRM. As we started it.
Are there silent supporters within the ruling party or the NRM that will support you in the election?
No doubt. Both silent and loud. There is no doubt about that. And of course, that explains why everything was done to try and prevent me from contesting within the party. Because I think it was clear that the likelihood of my victory was very high.
The need for electoral reforms has been kind of a clarion call by some opposition members. And lack of that, They say there can be no transparent election. What is your view in terms of the need for electoral reforms?
Yes, I've spoken in favor of electoral reforms. I was the chairman of the Cabinet Committee on Constitutional Reform. However, having said that, I think the problem is not the laws. The problem is acting in breach of the laws. Because at the moment, the problem we face in Uganda is that the government and institutions handling many of these matters actually do not act in accordance with the law.
That was former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi, who is running for President of Uganda as an independent candidate. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. 19-year-old Eritrean Girmay Gebreselassie won men's marathon on Saturday. Ethiopian Yemane Tsegei, then Ugandan Solomon Mutai, followed him across the finish line, while Kenyans Geoffrey Kipsang-Kam Woror and Paul Kipngetich Tanui clinched silver and bronze medals in 10,000 meters, respectively. On Sunday, Lebohang Shange set a South Africa men's 20-kilometer racewalk record of 1 hour 21 minutes and 43 seconds and was placed 11th. Egypt's Mustafa El Gamel was 7th in men's hammer throw, as Nigerian Hunoma Osazua was 18th in women's heptathlon. In basketball, Cameroon dismissed Gabon 93-67. Central African Republic edged Uganda 60-56 as Egypt outplayed Mali 55-49 and hosts Tunisia beat Nigeria 70-59 at the Africa Men's Basketball Championships in Tunis on Sunday. Earlier on Saturday, defending champions Angola pipped Morocco 68-67. Ivory Coast beat Zimbabwe 64-52. Senegal outplayed Mozambique 86-76. And Ivory Coast beat Zimbabwe 64-52. On Friday, Nigeria overpowered Uganda 98-59. Egypt edged Cameroon 83-77. Mali outplayed Gabon 78-54. And Tunisia beat the Central African Republic 68-52. Today, Monday, Morocco engage Mozambique, Senegal face Angola, Zimbabwe challenge Cape Verde Islands, and Algeria tackle Ivory Coast. In football, Sudan's El Hilal pipped the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe 1-0 in Orange Africa Champions League on Sunday. Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan edged Egypt's Smouha 2-1. Sudan's El Merrekh pipped Algeria's Mouloudia El Ulma 3-2, while in an all-Algerian encounter, USM Algiers outplayed defending champions Intensive 3-0. Elsewhere, Egypt's Zamalek outplayed Tunisia's CS Sfaxien 3-1 as Mali's Stade Malien and Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel drew 1-1 in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup on Sunday. South Africa's Orlando Pirates dismissed Republic of Congo's AC Leopards 2-0 and Egyptian defending champions El Ahly pipped Tunisia's Esperance 1-0. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's military said it repelled a Boko Haram attack on Saturday on a village 28 miles east of the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. But Army spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman denies the attack was a direct ambush on Army Chief Lieutenant General Toko Butai, who was visiting the area at the time of the attack. That's it for this Monday, August 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very productive week.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show. designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.